what a big show for you here today. I recap what turned into a pretty electric Monday Night Football game off the top before we dive into the People's Panic Meter. No Drake London panic after week two. That feels good. However, the people are panicking about Travis Kelce. There's a lot of worries about whether he's going to be a tight end difference maker this year. Same with Sam Laporta. The entire tight end position is a mess. But we also have to discuss some top end wide receivers. Garrett Wilson, is it time to freak out? Ja'Marr Chase, will the Bengals ever get going? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, September 17th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Spectrum. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And it really is, because we're coming off what ended up being a pretty exciting Monday Night Football matchup that I'm going to talk through with you here off the top of the show before we get to the week two, the post week two People's Panic Meter with Dalton Del Don later on. But yes, let's talk through what ended up being an exciting Monday Night Football game. Falcons 22, Eagles 21. I'll be honest with y'all. I was prepared to come on this show and kind of, hem and haw my way through this recap. A little bit of a, man, the run game is more important than ever. Bijan Robinson looks great out there. The Falcons were kicking ass up front. The Eagles had some great run plays too, some plays called back. For Saquon Barkley, was really prepared to talk about how a stat from Steve Palazzolo here, formerly of PFF, now is the 33rd team over there. He had this stat, passing touchdowns through 2 weeks of an NFL season, 2019, 105, 2020, 110, 2021, 110, 2022, 105, 2023, 86, pending Monday Night Football, so we got three added to this. 69 nice passing touchdowns in the first 2 weeks in 2024. I didn't even plan that. That's beautiful. I was prepared to talk about all that stuff. And again, some of the meta conversations we're having about football, about why the run game matters more and how defense is punching back. And then the last 2 minutes happened. And honestly, thank God for the Philadelphia Eagles having one of the most baffling, the most mismanaged, maybe just the dumbest, worst final 2 minute sequence we'll probably see for any team all season. I think it's going to be tough to beat that one. They call a pass play on third down, which Saquon Barkley, who had a good game tonight, has been a great player for the Eagles so far. 95 yards on the ground, another 21 yards through the air. He came just short in a rushing touchdown earlier that they pushed Jalen Hurts' tush in on this one. Again, Saquon Barkley drops that pass. He catches that thing. We're not having this conversation. We're not having a Falcons revival conversation. Ultimately, the Falcons end up going down the field in the final 2 minutes, and Drake London, thank the gods above, Drake London finds his way into the end zone for his first touchdown of the season. I got to say, now that that drive is obviously going to color a lot of what we're going to talk about with the Falcons going forward. I will say that even throughout the evening, I thought we saw a little bit better version of Kirk Cousins in this game. I was joking with ESPN's Bill Barnwell earlier that the Falcons clearly read the tweets. They clearly saw the media criticism about play action and the pistol and under center and all this stuff, because they came out pretty heavy, like play action under center stuff early on. I do think there was almost maybe a slight overcorrection to that at the beginning of this game, but I like that we did see some new wrinkles from the Falcons offense. Overall, Kirk Cousins had an efficient game. I do definitely still have some nits to pick, right? I don't think he set guys up for yards after catch opportunities. I thought there were some real tough throws, and not in a good way, tough throws to the outside in outbreaking routes in this game. That's going to be a problem as he continues to kind of try to plan off that back foot and everything, kind of tries to drive the ball. He does not have that right now. But again, with the way they ended this game, we'll see. I think we can leave a bit more of a candle lit for our Atlanta Falcons offensive players here. And, I watched the post-game interview that Kirk Cousins did with Lisa Salters after the game. And, he said a lot of this stuff. Honestly, he said a lot of the stuff that I've been trying to say when I'm trying to give some caveats here to the week one panic about the Falcons offense. And I was certainly panicked about what I saw. Kirk said in that postgame interview, number one, praise Drake London for a hell of a route and just being a hell of a player. And Kirk Cousins, I agree. Drake London is a hell of a player. Let's get the ball to Drake London more and more going forward. But he also said, look, he's not all the way back. He knows he wasn't sharp enough tonight, and he hasn't been sharp enough yet. And he knows that this is a process for him. It is an ongoing process. It was a really tough rehab and comeback for him. And that's something he knows he's fighting through, and he's not all the way where he needs to be yet. So I think knowing that and knowing his adjustment is something we need to take into context here. Also, he mentioned almost word for word things that I've been saying on this show and other shows throughout the course of the last week, panicking about the Falcons, which is there's a lot of new here. He said those exact words. And this is definitely a feeling out process. You know, I do wish they would have got some reps into the damn preseason. Maybe the NFL should experiment with some like exhibition games so guys can knock off the rust before the season. That would maybe be a pretty good idea. New offensive coordinator, all new guys trying to get to know each other here. So there's a lot going on. But the fact that we end this game on a high note for Kirk Cousins overall, an efficient evening for him, over 8 yards per attempt. He does have the big play, a couple big plays down the field to Darnell Mooney, who, you know, Darnell Mooney's a frustrating player. Him and Justin Fields definitely had a little bit of like they could match each other's freak in Chicago because they were just tantalizing, talented, clearly pretty good players, but also would just make the most baffling mistakes. Darnell Mooney showed you a little bit of that in his routes in this game, but he also is a nice little big play sprinkle here. There's certainly a lot more Darnell Mooney and Ray McLeod than I was projecting in this offense, but you know, Drake London still ties for the team lead in targets in seven. I feel pretty good about Drake London going forward coming out of this game. As long as we continue to stack good performances for Kirk Cousins, I'm a little nervous about him in that offensive line going against Kansas City in week three, but we will have plenty of opportunity to talk about that going forward. Again, I think this was a nice breath of fresh air to see Kirk Cousins have a viable game. And ultimately, again, that drive to win this game makes a pretty big difference when we're hopefully stacking momentum, which is what Kirk Cousins and this Falcons team said in the postgame interview they are looking to do as well. Talk about the Eagles here. I don't really know what to say. This offense, which Nate Tyson and I broke down some of the interesting wrinkles in the passing game, just looks a lot less potent without A.J. Brown out there. You know, we've got Britton Covey. We've got Jahan Dotson barely been on this team for but like 2 seconds in the wide receiver. It's just such a cataclysmic difference. You know, you take an elite player, just a top five wide receiver and A.J. Brown out of the mix here. This offense looks a lot less interesting from an aerial perspective. And again, Lisa Salter said during this game that A.J. Brown told her he's expecting to miss a couple of weeks. So we might not have A.J. Brown in our lives for the next couple of weeks here. That is definitely something we should prepare for. You know, Devontae Smith's good, really good player. He's a guy that will be obviously a high-end wide receiver two, low-end wide receiver one every single week in fantasy when A.J. Brown's out. But, you know, again, this offense is certainly much less potent there. This Falcons defense has some pretty good players. You know, I think they fooled Jalen Hurts a couple of times. I think they got some decent looks on the back end. They got good safeties. They got a good corner in A.J. Terrell. I think this Falcons defense is a little bit better than maybe some of the really, really low projections coming into the year had Atlanta. But it's still, again, this is a unit that this Eagles offense should have had. It's should have had some more advantageous looks against, and we just didn't get those. So not too much to say from a fantasy perspective for the Philadelphia Eagles. Super frustrating night from them. Their defense is definitely remains a unit to attack. We saw confirmation of that at the end of the game. I think the only silver lining really for fantasy we can throw out here is just that Jalen Hurts carries the ball 13 times. He gets over 80 yards and a touchdown. I still think some of the like design stuff, the option stuff to the edge is not great with Jalen Hurts. But when you can get him rolling downhill, whether it's on quarterback draws or obviously scramble plays, he still looks like he can get out there and make plays with his legs. And we had a couple tush-push moments as well in this game. So that's good news if you still want to consider Jalen Hurts a top three fantasy quarterback, which I do. But again, this offense is much, much less potent without A.J. Brown. So he's somebody that we need to get back in action pretty soon. So yeah, really fun Monday night game. Ultimately, a good ending, one that I'm going to have to kind of like calm myself here. Got a lot of adrenaline working after that one. But hey, that's good. Football's back, baby. We love to have this in our lives. We also love hearing from you all in the People's panic meter. So let's toss it to the people's panic meter coming out of week two and our good buddy Dalton Del Don as we dive into it all. Joining me now is the one and only Dalton Del Don. Dalton, what's going on, buddy? How was your week two?
Harmon, I'm not going to lie to you. I had a rough Sunday. Should have known something was off. I woke up Sunday morning. My daughter Chloe's knee had swollen up bad overnight. She had another successful race Saturday, but her knee blew up on her. So she's dealing with an injury, getting an x-ray on Monday. My survivors were wiped out, fella. So there'll be no sweats this year.
Oh, no.
You know, I fly to Las Vegas with a buddy. Spend too much money on entries. My wife gets upset with me. I mean, this is a high stakes format. And I did a couple entries and they were all dead after week two. So very frustrated over that. And then, you know, some other annoying things. Anthony Richardson flopped. Cooper Kupp, I was bragging about my future bet. Hey, I still have that closing line value, though, on his future bets I had of him. And he's now going to be sidelined. And my guy Breece Hall lost multiple touchdowns to his backup running back. So we could just move on from week two as far as I'm concerned, because it was not my favorite.
Well, unfortunately, Dalton, we're not totally moving on from week two, although we try to look forward on this particular podcast, because we got to go through the submissions to the week two People's Panic Meter.
Would you say it's time for everyone to panic?
Yes, I would, Kent.
Oh, my God. Okay, it's happening.
No. Wait.
All right, Dalton, you know how this goes here, man. We literally do have a bunch of submissions. People brought it this week, and there were some really good ones, too. I want to give a shout out to our listeners and our viewers here. There were some great messages into especially the email, fantasy mailbag at yahoosports.com. There were some great submissions, some great things to the People's Panic Meter. So if you're new, we're going to talk about some disappointing performances from players, teams, units, etc., and we are going to put them into the People's Panic Meter. We're going to tell you whether we have no panic, some panic, total panic, or if panic time is over and this particular player or offense or whatever has got to go right into the coping corner. And I'll say, spoiler alert, we do have our first coping corner entrance in this particular podcast here, Dalton. So let's jump right into it. And let's start with the team that is in the news here as we are taping this on Monday evening. Kyle sends in this via email. Again, I'm really going to have fun reading these in this podcast because there are some good ones. So Kyle sends in via email. Long time, first time. Are we to the point where all Panthers players are unplayable for the foreseeable future in all formats? This offense looks historically bad and the defense may be worse. This team has started worse than the 2021 Urban Meyer Jags, the 2020 Adam Gase Jets, and the 2017 Browns on both ends of the football. Vibes are low. It feels like it may be time to consider the sage advice a wise man once told me about something, well, Panther-related. Something about studies that 60% of the time, it works every time. This may be worse than the 60%, unless you can convince me it smells better. River Canoe, Ron. Obviously great Anchorman ref there, a great entrance in about the Carolina Panthers, but Dalton, maybe less panic about the Panthers because as we learned on Monday, they are benching Bryce Young and Andy Dalton will be starting. Lot to say about this topic. What was your reaction when you saw the news?
I was going to put this in a coping corner if it was still Bryce Same. Young. I mean, Panthers lowest success rate over the first two games since the expansion Texans. Bryce Young was pressured on just 4 of 29 dropbacks in week 2, the lowest rate of any starting quarterback, and still, you know, played horribly. On third down so far this season, 1.7 yards per attempt, one passing first down. Yeah, I mean, I believe that Dave Canales could really improve him, but it seems like even he can't. Two things here. Dave Canales, Tampa Bay is succeeding without him. Mm-hmm. And Canales is really kind of down there, and you look at the motion and play action stuff too. So I don't know if I... It might be both. We overrated Canales, and also Bryce Young was unfunctionable regardless of the coach. So, yeah, I was in on Deontay Johnson this year. That looks wrong. And Jonathan Brooks, you know, how's that going to be once he's off the IR? So maybe Andy Dalton moves this to total panic instead of coping corner. It sounds like you're leaning toward. But, yeah, with Bryce Young, we've kind of seen enough, and maybe he's just simply too small to succeed at the NFL level.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunately just it's not going to happen for Bryce Young. And I feel bad because he seems like a good guy. But it's this it's crazy. We've had three quarterback moves in the last few years, the Russell Wilson trade, the Deshaun Watson trade, and then the Bryce Young trade up. And all three of them felt completely dead in the water so quickly. At least two of the three teams have moved on from that cataclysmic mistake. And that's not the one that, by the way, I think the Deshaun Watson trade is the worst one just because of the contract that they ended up giving him. But at least here, the Panthers are, I'll give Dave Canales some flowers here that he's at least got the stones and also the voice in the organization to make this move. I was pretty surprised that two games into the season, they're willing to say, hey, we can't do this. But Dalton, I say this all the time. The one thing you can't do as a coach, you can lie to the media, you can lie to fans, you can lie to, you know, free agents and things like that, draft picks, whatever. You cannot lie to the guys that are out there on the field, man. And it is just so apparent watching this team on film that, like, Bryce Young is the problem. Like, because I've seen Deontay Johnson have good seasons. I've seen Adam Thielen play good football. I've seen Dave Canales, whether you're right, I think you're right, and I'm still some to total panic on this because I think Canales maybe we overrated him a little bit, but I've seen him coach a functional offense before. I've seen some of these linemen play well in other situations. So this is just, again, there's a common denominator here. It is the quarterback. It was not going anywhere with Bryce Young. So I give them some credit for moving on from this. And, you know, maybe we see him again this year. Maybe we don't, but it is at least worth noting with Andy Dalton, man. He was the most productive Panthers quarterback in any start from passing yards perspective over the last few seasons when he had to start last year. So because of that, I do hold out some hope for Deontay Johnson, Jonathan Brooks, and some of these guys in fantasy.
Yeah, Adam Thielen was a PPR machine for a few weeks last year with Dalton. So you got to consider it an upgrade, but I'm still sticking these guys on fantasy benches. Not really many options, but Deontay, I'm holding on to, but keeping him on benches. And I agree, Canales, it's definitely a bold move. Week three into the season, I mean, considering the capital and number one overall pick, it's definitely a statement making this decision so soon.
Yeah, I mean, look, you just would not have been able to be a serious operation. That was not credible football, what was going on in Carolina. I mean, their Bears offense is actually worse, but I mean, they're by far one of the worst and least efficient offenses, certainly the least explosive offense in the NFL right now. And they go to the Raiders this week against Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins. Like, it just would have been almost, it's almost like a mercy benching for Bryce Young, even though I'm sure he doesn't see it that way. And I just think this pick was doomed from the start because he does not have it physically. He is not an NFL quarterback. And I think that's just unfortunately where this is. So we'll see what happens with Andy Dalton. I do have some, I think we're at, are you at total panic or some panic for these guys? I'm going to keep it at some panic right now, just because I do have a little bit of optimism that an NFL quarterback who's seen it and done it and been there before, and Andy Dalton, can get these guys to, you know, maybe close to where their fantasy ADPs were.
Yeah. I moved from coping corner to total panic still, though. It's still a pretty dire situation.
I think we can go to total panic on this one as well. All right, next one up here, we've got a voicemail from Ed Meyer. A lot of concern about one Brandon Ayuk. Let's hear what Ed had to say.
Cut to the chase. Ayuk looks bad. He looks so bad. The routes don't look good. I don't know if it's a conditioning thing or he just gets tired later in the games. He's not blocking like he used to. Like, the one thing you could always say about those 49ers receivers were that they would get after it in the run game. I don't think I've really ever noticed him being, until this year, like a liability there. There's multiple run plays this year where he's just getting demolished by smaller cornerbacks. It just looks like he doesn't want to be there. I don't know if I should be freaked out as a Niners fan. But yeah, love the show. Long time listener, long time RP subscriber. Thank you.
All right, Dalton, pretty scathing takedown of Brandon Ayuk. I do agree with Ed that some of the blocking has not been great. Some of, you know, he doesn't look like he's totally locked in just yet, but I don't have any real concerns about Ayuk from like a does he want to be there standpoint or anything. I actually have no panic overall with Ayuk. I think he's going to totally get right. His route participation jump from week one and week two. And Dalton, as we found out on Monday night, the other 49ers wideout, Deebo Samuel, is going to miss multiple weeks with a calf strain. So I think all things are looking up for Brandon Ayuk. No panic on this one.
Yeah, zero panic for me with BA. His yards per route run, you know, has fallen from third last season to 100th through the first two games this year. His average yards of separation is the fourth lowest in the NFL. Still, this is the same player that ranked in the 96th and 97th percentile in success rate in man and press as a route runner via reception perception. Pretty missed him in the end zone. It would have been for a score. They've just been out of sync with Ayuk missing so much practice time. Purdy faced the most pressures of his career and still finished with the second best completion percentage above expectation against the Vikings when the Niners ran play action on just 7% of the snaps. That was a tough matchup. The Vikings are the only NFC opponent that's beaten Purdy in the regular season. Purdy entered the season with a career touchdown rate of 7%. Yes, that was going to regress some, but that's down to 1.5% this year. Purdy leads the NFL in passing yards. No CMC for the foreseeable future, and also no Debo now. Yeah, Ayuk is a buy-low candidate if there ever was one. And week three, they get the Rams defense. That's the only one in the league that ranks bottom five in success rate against the run and the pass. So expect the Niners offense to get right, and Ayuk is going to be the beneficiary here of no Debo.
Yeah, huge benefit for Ayuk to not have Debo in the lineup and also get the Rams. And, you know, they played the Vikings last week, and you're right to quote some of those Purdy pressure stats. I thought it was telling, by the way, Dalton, that Purdy literally went up to Brian Flores after the game and said the scheme was crazy. Did you see that clip going around? I mean, Flores has put bad quarterbacks in the blender, and he's given good quarterbacks and good offenses trouble as well. I think we have to sort of realize that this Vikings defense is going to be one of the tougher ones that quarterbacks have to go against because they can throw so much at you. I mean, they're like showing one thing pre-snap and getting in a completely different look afterwards. The cover two stuff they did was really good against this particular offense as well. So they definitely had Purdy kind of off kilter, and he's certainly not gonna, he does not have that timing yet with Ayuk just yet. So I think that's gonna, like, the complete other end of the spectrum is what they're gonna get in the Rams this week. So obviously it stinks for the offensive ecosystem overall to lose Debo. Although I do think, you know, we're gonna talk about the 49ers running backs later. I actually think I'm kind of over the Debo running back stuff anyways. Yeah. And I'm not saying that losing Debo is a good thing, but I think just giving base carries to Jordan Mason going forward is probably better overall for the offense. Like, Debo he's one of these players that needs fewer touches on his plate. And because this stuff is going to happen, so he'll be, it sounds like it's just going to be a few weeks. He'll eventually get back out there. It would be really nice if Ricky Pearsall was available. Of course, he's still coming back from the gunshot that he suffered in the preseason. So, man, just hope we see the 49ers at full strength at some point, because we're not there right now. But for Brandon Ayuk specifically, annoying start to the season with the contract stuff. You kind of had to know that was going to happen, but I still bet he is going to be a top 15 bare minimum wide receiver by the end of the year.
Most yards in NFL history for someone with fewer than 110 targets last year, still in the prime of his career. Get trade for Brandon Ayuk if possible.
All right, so yeah, we're at no panic on Brandon Ayuk. Obviously stinks for the 49ers to lose Debo Samuel for any amount of time. Again, just hope we see this offensive unit at full strength. Certainly someone who's not at the strength that we are used to seeing is Travis Kelce. This next one comes in from Ernie via email about the one-time top fantasy tight end. The Chiefs are 2-0. Travis Kelce is the tight end 17. I have a feeling that he is no longer a factor in the Chiefs' success, and I can't shake it off. When I drafted him, all I could think was, you belong with me. 2 weeks in, and I'm seeing red. In my wildest dreams, I couldn't imagine this start. May as well have a blank space in my tight end slot. Tell me it'll get better. We also had a tweet from Miss the Flop who said, I'm concerned that Taylor Swift has more fantasy value than Travis Kelce right now. We'll talk about Isaiah Pacheco and replacement options and his injury in the waiver segment at the end of the show. But Dalton, I think the thing that people are freaking out the most about with Kansas City besides Isaiah Pacheco is Travis Kelce. But man, I got to say, a hell of an email from Ernie, probably one of our best ones of all time.
Yes, I did catch some of those references. Some panic for me. Kelce scored fewer than 7 PPR points in each of his first two games, matching his total from last year. Last time he caught fewer than 3 passes in a game like he did Sunday was during Patrick Mahomes' second career start. He turns 35 years old next month. But on the positives, he did have a 40-yard gain called back Sunday. He's still running a lot of routes. He's coming off a couple of tough matchups. Many of the tight ends are failing in fantasy this season. No Hollywood Brown for the season. I love me Xavier Worthy, but you know, how many targets is he going to command? So I think Kelsey's going to be fine. Just some panic here. I think, you know, when it's all said and done, he's going to be a top five fantasy tight end. But I would probably prefer Brock Bowers moving forward. I will say that.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm a little closer to total panic, but I'm with you that I'll go some panic on this one. I think we can our official designation is some panic, even though I was pretty close to putting it at total panic, just because, you know, Kelsey went, at least on Yahoo drafts, he went closer to, you know, Sam Laporta than Trey McBride / Mark Andrews. People paid a pretty significant draft pick for him, and it is, I just think it's an, look, we can point back to last year where, oh, by the end of the season, he was rolling, especially in the playoffs and all that. But the beginning of last season wasn't good, and we're another year older in Travis Kelce's career. Where it's like, dude, is he – do not clip this for social. Do not put this on Twitter, anybody who's watching this. Do not tweet me about it. But, like, is Travis Kelce just more of a mascot for the Chiefs now than he is a player? I think that sometimes while watching him. Is he there for vibes? Is he there because – you know, he's one of the most famous football players on planet Earth. I'm sure he loves the game. I know he wants to win. He wants to pad his legacy, whatever. And Mahomes obviously loves having him as a reliable player. So I'm being a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But is he more important to the Chiefs as a mascot than a player right now? Part of me thinks that when watching this team. Because also, by the way, Dalton, I'm just concerned a little bit about the Chiefs ecosystem as a whole, because I don't think Xavier Worthy is ready to command a lot of targets. They got their ass kicked up front because of their rookie left tackle, Kingsley Suamatia, who they thought was just going to be ready to rock. That was the reason I was closer to total panic here, is that even when he gets rolling, you know, I don't think it's going to be the same high-flying Chiefs ecosystem, you know, that we were kind of imagining this year.
Yeah, that's fair. And if you did draft Kelce as the tight end one and in the first few rounds, I get it. Maybe my panic would be higher. Mahomes just finished with the fewest passing yards in any game he started and finished last on Sunday. Pacheco's injury, as much as I'm loving some Carson Steele, that's going to make this team even more pass heavy and already a high pass rate of expectation. So I think he's just in such a good situation. But you never know. A cliff can come and it can come fast. So right. I'm not going to push too hard. If you want total panic, that's totally fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, if you're okay with it, I'll go to total panic on this one. I'd be freaking out a little bit if I have Travis Kelce as my fantasy tight end. All right. Next one up here comes from Eric, also via email. Love this one. Taking some shots at fantasy Twitter here. During the offseason, one of fantasy football Twitter's favorite games is to play, quote, who is this year's insert huge breakout player from last year here? We kind of do a segment of that on this podcast. So, you know, maybe you're ripping us, Eric, you know, when we do the flip the script. That's fair if you are. Anyways, back to Eric's email. One of this summer's popular insert name here was Garrett Wilson, a star in the making real life wide receiver. All Wilson needed to be talked about as a potential 1.01 in 2025 was an actually good quarterback. I keep hoping we wake up from this nightmare in week 3, but I'm starting to think it was we who were on the ayahuasca retreat all along when we thought that Aaron Rodgers would be Wilson's savior. Now I'm panicking big time. Again, tweet on this one we got from Corbin Young. Alan Lazard has more fantasy points than Garrett Wilson through 2 weeks. Send help. Dalton, are you panicking at all about Garrett Wilson?
Some panic for me. Sure, I used a first-round pick on him. I ranked him higher than A.J. Brown. But yes, Aaron Rodgers is a big improvement at the quarterback position for New York. But the Jets lead the league in running back target share. A third of their passes are going to running backs. You look at Aaron Rodgers' passing chart from this last week, and it should be noted that this Titans defense might be awesome, but Rodgers attempted just 3 passes, 10-plus yards downfield. So it's some panic for me. Garrett Wilson's a great player. He'll regress positively, and Lazard I'm not worried about whatsoever. But I think it's fair to ask, would you rather Nico Collins? Would you rather Rashee Rice over him moving forward this season?
Nico Collins, yes. Talked about this on the pod. Yeah, he's a guy I might want Nico Collins ahead of Garrett Wilson in Dynasty. You know, I like definitely this year for sure. One guy's catching passes from CJ Stroud, the other is not. I'm not totally there with Rashee Rice just yet. I think Rice is probably like a top 15 wide receiver rest of season, especially without Marquise Brown and with Travis Kelce, I think being a limited player. But I think Garrett Wilson still will end up as a back half wide receiver 1. Does he have top 5 in his range of outcomes with this version of Rodgers? Maybe not, but he's eighth in the NFL in first read target share, according to Fantasy Points data. He's run almost 37% of his routes from the slot. I think the usage is there for him. The opportunity's been there through 2 weeks. They've played two pretty good defenses. What I really want us to recalibrate to so far through 2 weeks that nobody seems to want to talk about is that the Titans, while they're quarterbacked by this generation's Jameis Winston and, you know, one of the all-time knuckleheads at quarterback in Will Levis, that defense is good, man. That defense will kick you around up front and they beat you up in the secondary. So I think these have been two tough defenses for New York to start. I'm willing to give them some grace. I am actually at no panic for Garrett Wilson. There are some guys I might want like Nico Collins ahead of him, but that doesn't mean he can't still be a wide receiver one this year.
Traveling during a short week too. I love those utilization notes you pointed out. So that's fine. I mean, Garrett Wilson's such an awesome player. I won't push back on that at all. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, it's a couple different difficult matchups here actually upcoming. Patriots, Broncos, Vikings, Bills, Steelers, Patriots again. And the Texans in week 9. That's actually not a great slate of defenses coming up. There's no clear like, oh, this is the Garrett Wilson eruption spot. So just because of where Rodgers is and where the defensive, like this schedule coming up here, I do think, again, he's more of a back half wide receiver one than a guy that's going to rocket into the top five, but still a very good player that's getting the type of usage. So I'll still go no panic here. You could have made a worse first round pick, I'll tell you that.
And they might be forced to pass more. They just want to win with defense and running, but they've suffered some injuries, obviously, with who is it? Reddick holding out. Their defense did not look nearly as good week one either. So, and then Jermaine Johnson suffered the injury too. So they're maybe they'll have to pass more too. And we know Aaron Rodgers loves to throw near the goal line. So he's perfect fit for that. So I'm cool with you saying no panic at all.
All right, let's move to Chuck via email. Sends in... Chuck Bass, by the way, is one who did this. Shout out to him. I am currently the business agent representing Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. 2 months ago, I put down $750,000 on a timeshare in Tulum, 25.9% interest, under the assumption that my clients were going to get paid in the shade. Since then, the Bengals have fallen apart, and I've had to pick up additional work ranging from music festival porta potty cleanup to taking rich older ladies out to dinner. Just dinner! Chuck reminds us, as someone deeply invested in the 0-2 Bengals and desperately in need of health insurance, work-related, how panicked at the disco should I be? Cheers. Let's take this one by one and let's talk T. Higgins first. From a panic meter perspective, Dalton, T. Higgins obviously not playing. The Bengals, I thought, actually looked pretty good on Sunday from an offensive perspective, but still got another loss dropped on their head by the Chiefs.
T. Higgins, we just don't know. So reportedly, his health is moving in the right direction. So, I mean, there's some panic. But once he returns, this isn't a bad situation other than Burrow's, you know, never throwing it downfield anymore. There are only five teams that are positive pass rate over expectation. And the Bengals lead by far, nearly plus 10%. You love to see the Raiders and Seahawks up there, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Burrow was just facing a Kansas City defense that allowed 4.5 yards per play at home last year. Only the Browns allowed fewer. So it was a tough matchup. And who else do you want to talk about next? Higgins, it's really just how soon can he get back on the field?
Yeah.
Chase is off to a slow start. It's expected. The guy didn't practice all offseason.
Yeah, so for Higgins, I think we go some panic. It's just, you know, again, where is he from a health perspective? When's he going to get back on the field? But once he's back there, I think that the role is pretty, is going to be there. It's maybe he won't. The thing is, T. Higgins didn't cost you much in fantasy drafts. Like, he was a wide receiver three. His ADP really never came up. There's some room for error here if he loses some target work to, like, I don't know, Yoshivas or Gesicki or Jermaine Burton, these guys that are kind of rising up here. But I actually think that's good overall for the offensive ecosystem. So maybe not the worst thing in the world. I'm at some panic with Higgins just because of targets and the health. But Chase is more interesting. So let's go to Ja'Marr Chase. We got the email from Chuck. But we also got this one from Chris. I picked Ja'Marr Chase as my wide receiver one in my two wide receiver non-PPR league. So I was going to say he's the player I'm most panicked about. But not to worry, I have Cooper Kupp. Are you kidding me? We'll get to Cooper Kupp in the second half of the show. But let's talk about Ja'Marr Chase. I will say this, Dalton. I don't know what your analysis is on Ja'Marr Chase. I'll just throw this out. They play Washington in week three. Washington, week three. Ever heard of the Commanders defense? Not a very good unit. So with all this panicking about Ja'Marr Chase, I'm at no panic, and I feel like the rest of the world will be by the end of Sunday's matchup.
That's a great point. Yes, Washington, they've just been giving up so many big fantasy performances to wide receiver ones, trying to, you know, lower, calm my expectations for Neighbors coming off that performance. but yeah, Chase, I believe he's been seeing more time in the slot. And as I said, a slow start could be expected coming off such a, you know, off season in which they never got any reps with Burrow. It was a tough matchup, and now it goes to the best matchup. So yes, if you can get Chase before this week, do it. If any owners, if any fantasy manager is showing any panic whatsoever, go try to trade for Chase right now.
100%. Couldn't stamp that harder with the stamp of approval here, Dalton Del Don, because you mentioned the slot stuff, which overall for the long term, I mean, it was beneficial in week one. This is the thing. Jamar Chase had a pretty decent week one game, all things considered. You know, he had a pretty decent week one game for what we were sort of expecting from him if you ended up playing him. In week two, it was a dud game because the slot stuff overall in the long term will be good. Like I said, it was beneficial in week one. Long term, I think it's going to be good that he's playing. He's getting those more of those layup targets, especially with where Burrow is at this point, where this offensive line is. The offense used more motion in week two, which long term, again, I think will benefit a guy like Jamar Chase. The Chiefs are just the one defense that's actually bad against, because their best corner, Trent McDuffie, plays in the slot. Typically, like, oh, the Broncos have Pat Surtain. He's probably not going to track you into the slot. Or some of these classic shadow corners, they're not going to track you into the slot. Trent McDuffie is the slot corner. That is his primary position. So this was the one week where that wasn't necessarily going to be beneficial. And McDuffie had a great game covering Jamar Chase. I think he only allowed one catch for 4 yards. Coverage stats can be a little misleading, but overall, great player. Having a good game there. So I'm at no panic. And yeah, I'm with you. If you can get Jamar Chase right now, do it before I guess a Monday night football game between Washington and Cincinnati. What a treat.
Couple Monday nighters this week.
Yes, we have two Monday nighters coming up here. Oh boy. Thank God for the two TV setup. Okay, let's move on to Mark, who says he's got two players that he's asking about, actually three players, but we're going to cover one of them in the next email. So Mark via email sends in three Christians he's freaked out about. All right, whether it's been from injuries or performance, Christian McCaffrey, Christian Watson, and Christian Kirk have all struggled so far. I guess you could say Ringo has lost faith. Haha, you don't need to laugh at your own joke, Mark. Come on. Are my draft rankings in the accuracy contest going to hell in 2024, or do I just need to pray harder? Well, at least I have my awful jokes and terrible puns to fall back on. Okay, Mark, I'll give you credit for being self-aware with the jokes and the puns and all that with the Christian stuff. That's funny. Okay, we'll talk Christian Kirk in the next email because someone else sent in a Christian Kirk email. Christian McCaffrey, I don't know what to say. Yeah, it's going to suck if you have Christian McCaffrey on your fantasy team. Do you have anything to add about McCaffrey? I mean, it just is what it is.
Yeah, it just is what it is. It's horrible. We wish we had more information. It sounds like he could be sidelined for, I mean, many weeks. This is not going to be quick. Well, I mean, would you rather Jordan Mason right now moving? Who would you rather have on your fantasy roster, Jordan Mason or Christian McCaffrey?
I mean, if I got to play somebody right now, I want Jordan Mason.
I mean, right now on your fantasy team for the rest of the year, would you trade Christian McCaffrey for Jordan Mason? Because I think I would, is what I'm saying. I think there's that big of a concern I'm having with McCaffrey. Maybe that'll look bad, and I hope McCaffrey comes back as a Niner fan and he balls out in the fantasy playoffs. But I'm concerned, and I think when he does return, I mean, I guess I can't put anything past Shanahan, but I would expect Mason to get still some carries, you know, in the mix in there. And I don't know if he can hold up a whole year, guys like this, and I've never seen him, but man, he put in the work in the offseason. He worked on that jugs machine. The targets have not been there. He does not have the overall upside. Obviously, he's not the player McCaffrey, but his role is not quite the same as McCaffrey. But Brian Flores' run defense, I believe it allowed like 60-yard rusher twice in the last 16 games, and Mason still just went off for 100 in Minnesota with a horrible game script. I mean, I'm going to treat him as a top five fantasy running back every week, regardless of matchup. And I'm very concerned that we don't see McCaffrey for 8 weeks from now. I mean, I don't want to, I mean, I hope I'm wrong, man. I'm a Niner guy, but total panic if I'm not coping corner, but total panic if I'm a CMC fantasy guy. And I do have a CMC in a league.
Yeah, one of my dynasty teams quickly went from contending to rebuilding because CMC is not a part of the equation anymore. So that is where we're at for sure. Let's talk Christian Watson, though, because he was the other part of this email. I'm a total panic if I'm a Christian Watson drafter. And, I mean, you didn't have to spend too much to get him. I'm just talking about his rest of season outlook. And this is coming from somebody who has historically been lower on Watson than consensus. So maybe I'm biased in this, but he's run a route on only 59% of the dropbacks so far. You know, Jade Reed has played more than him. Romeo Doubs has played more than him. He did not register in the box score on Sunday. Obviously, Jordan Love being out is a part of this, but I think the Packers right now have listened to what I said all offseason, which is that less is more with Christian Watson. You're not going to get the best use out of him if you funnel targets to him. I just think he was the most misunderstood player, you know, by a bunch of fantasy analysts this offseason. And again, maybe this is confirmation bias because the first 2 weeks have kind of gone from a usage perspective. Forget the results. From a usage perspective, have looked more like what I think he actually should be used, especially in the context of a very crowded receiver room. So if I drafted Christian Watson and was counting on him in any way, I would be total panic right now.
Yeah, no pushback here. I'm with you on Watson. This was always within his range of outcomes. That said, if Jordan Love returns in the next couple of weeks, Watson could have some spike weeks. He'll definitely capable of having big fantasy weeks. And this, for now, though, with Malik Willis, despite them winning, I mean, they're just obviously going to hide the quarterback, and you do not want to start Christian Watson while Willis is starting. But his usage has been as discouraging as, you know, the quarterback injury. And at the tight end position, what about Tucker Kraft is totally eclipsing Musgrave? I mean, Musgrave was the guy getting drafted there. So that's another usage pattern in Green Bay that's not encouraging.
Yeah, agree. I think that while Willis is playing, we're not considering starting any of these Packers receivers. Maybe Jaden Reed if you're desperate, but I really don't think you're going to get much out of that either. So
he's banged up too. He's playing banged up.
Of course he is. I think that he's just probably, he's definitely their best skill position player, I think, right now. Jaden Reed, very, very good, but he is banged up. Malik Willis is back there. They're running the hell out of the ball, which was super exciting to watch on Sunday. But yeah, Christian Watson's a guy that he's probably going to get dropped. I wouldn't mind picking him up once Jordan Love gets back, but any sort of preseason expectations of him being anything more than like a better in best ball type of player, I think we're a little misguided all along. And so far, through the first 2 weeks, I think that's played out. Talk about another player I wasn't drafting very much this year. Tristan sends in via email, "What do I do with Christian Kirk? I have tried to trade him, but no bites. Is he safe enough to stash him on my bench or try to pick up someone off of waivers? Thank you." Thank you, Tristan. Dalton, I mean, I said before the season started that I'd rather have Brian Thomas than Christian Kirk, and at least Brian Thomas has done something. But I'm so out on the Jags. I'm so out on this Doug Peterson thing. I'm out on just everything that's going on in Jacksonville right now. So I would try to not be invested in the Jaguars in any way this year, but Kirk is definitely someone that I really don't know if we're going to get consistent value from him from a fantasy perspective. So I would be at total panic if he was somebody that I spent a mid-round pick on and was counting on him to be a wide receiver 3.
Agreed. I'm at total panic as well. Brian Thomas and Gabe Davis both have more targets than Kirk through 2 weeks. You called this. You warned everyone before. You kept hammering this. So props to you. The biggest worry for me is this last week, because Kirk, it was not the easiest matchup, but he put up a dud with Evan Engram out.
Concerning.
He had massive splits last year with Engram on and off the field, and he couldn't produce with Engram out. So that, to me, is like really the most eye-opening thing here for his disappointing start to the year. Trevor Lawrence is 0-7 his last 7 starts, pressured on the 4th highest rate of his dropbacks in week 2, and then finished with the 2nd worst CPOE. Press Taylor, we know, remains a problem. So yeah, not a lot to like with this Jacksonville offense right now.
Yeah, I think, again, Brian Thomas has showed well, but he's not even getting a ton of targets. Nobody's higher. Gabe Davis somehow leads his team in targets with 10. Nobody's higher than a 20% target share, though, in this offense, and I don't think that's going to change. I think all 3 of those guys are going to kind of cannibalize each other, and this is where it really helps to understand player archetypes. A guy like Christian Kirk is going to need a lot of targets to hit. Brian Thomas doesn't need a lot of targets to hit. And that's why in the offense that's clearly trying to push it downfield, especially up the seams against cover 2 and stuff like that, I think that's why Brian Thomas is probably the guy to have here. They've tried to get downfield shots to Kirk, but it is not working so far. Just 2 catches on 7 targets for the year for Christian Kirk. I don't think he's a drop necessarily. I try to keep him on my bench just in case there's more injuries here. And he is tied to a quarterback that I think is pretty good. But I understand that when we get to the waiver wire segment, there's not a ton of like great names that you're just like rushing to pick up. So I wouldn't drop Kirk yet, but when Agreed. You get to bye weeks and stuff like that, and there's someone great on the wire, maybe you end up having to play somebody else. All right. Final email we have. This one comes in from Colin, not producer Colin, but someone named Colin. The subject of the email was just Michael Pittman. And then he included the then he included the quote from Hawkeye in Avengers Endgame, I believe, where it said, "Don't give me hope." That's all he wrote. That was the whole email. I tell you what, Colin, I'm not going to give you hope. I'm actually totally panicked about the Colts wide receivers as a whole. We did get a lot of tweets about your boy Anthony Richardson, of course. Dalton, I'll give you a chance to speak on Richardson, but just from a Colts receiver perspective, Richardson is a developing quarterback who is not consistently accurate, and this is now a very crowded wide receiver room that Josh Downs hasn't even been playing in yet. So I am concerned that none of these Colts receivers are going to get the volume or the consistency from a passing perspective to be players that we can trust on a weekly basis in fantasy, especially because like Alec Pierce is not, I think Alec Pierce was treated by the fantasy community as some kind of worthless player, but he's not worthless. He actually is good as a deep threat and he can run like three routes. That's it. But he's good on those routes and Richardson is willing to throw him the ball on those particular patterns. So I don't think he's totally going away. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen to A.D. Mitchell when Josh Downs gets back. But again, that's a lot of names here. Michael Pittman's not going to get 8 to 10 targets every single week. And even if he does, Richardson is what he is at this point. He's not ready to elevate these guys on a weekly basis.
Total panic for me, Michael Pittman. I mean, I didn't love his ADP entering the year. He's a top 50 pick in Yahoo and full PPR leagues. You know, he was going second, third round. His target share has been 42% and 23% in the first two games, but he hasn't scored 8 PPR points in either contest. Yeah, in fact, he hasn't scored 10 PPR points in 5 straight games dating back to last year. Alec Pierce, is he actually emerging? I didn't really see this coming. A.D. Mitchell has flashed, and you mentioned it. Josh Downs will be back soon. And as much as I love, you know, Richardson and Jaden Daniels, fantasy-wise, that's bad news for McLaurin and Pittman, man. These guys, yeah, you know, they're getting their fantasy points by running. My guy Richardson had an off game, to be sure. I believe he was last. I said Lawrence was second to last. I believe that was the only guy worse was my guy Richardson in completion percentage above expectation. But that was a sloppy, weird game outdoors. Do you guess the time of possession the Colts had, Harmon? Guess how many minutes they had?
I mean, it had to be like what? I don't even know, but it had to be super low.
19 minutes they had the ball in this game. So, I mean, I know Richardson's capable of putting up 25 burger on you in only 17 minutes like he did in a quarter half last year. But that you know, a bad game script. And Richardson, it's going to be a roller coaster with his passing. I mean, you just love all those attempts downfield over fantasy. I mean, isn't this just the jackpot? A guy who runs like crazy and all his attempts are downfield to these crazy athletes. I mean, with the best schemer. Yes, I know. It can't be theoretical points. I understand that. He has to hit him. But man, so many opportunities. But yeah, a down game for him, but I love him getting back in the dome. But again, 19 minutes of possession when the team ran the ball 50 times with Jake. You know, I mean, the Packers were just running the ball every play. So I'll take that as an anomaly. No worries for my guy Richardson, assuming he can stay healthy. Same. But Pittman, a total panic.
Yeah, Pittman is total panic. I am a little nervous about the Colts offense just being able to have time of possession because they've given up like a historic amount of rushing yards in the first 2 weeks of the season.
And Buckner got hurt.
It's one thing to get run over by the Texans and, you know, oh man, Joe Mixon, we weren't quite sure what we got there. Yeah. You knew what the Packers were going to do, bro. They have Malik Willis behind center and Matt LaFleur called a hell of a game. I mean, one of the most enjoyable experiences to watch was that Packers run game. It was sick, but the Colts just got obliterated up front. I don't know what, like, from a schematic standpoint, it's a disaster. From a personnel standpoint, it's a disaster. So I don't know. That is problematic. So they'll have to hit deep shots. That's for sure. I'm on total panic with Michael Pittman. No panic, though, really, on Anthony Richardson. Okay. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will get to our social submissions to the People's Panic Meter right after this. All right, Dalton, let's hit the ones that have come in from the folks on social media, starting with Tegan_G. Panicked about Sam Laporta, who I am seriously considering benching for Brock Bowers next week. Dalton, what is our level of panic about Sam Laporta, and how high are you on Brock Bowers the rest of the way?
First of all, shout out to those emails. They were great stuff there. There's some panic for me on Sam Laporta, especially considering how high he was drafted. He's already matched the number of games this season where he's at a sub 10% target share. Both of these games this year have come at home. Laporta scored 10 of his 11 touchdowns at home last year. Jameson Williams breaking out is a thing. I mean, he's getting first read targets. Like, I mean, he is clearly going to be a thing in Detroit this year. And Jared Goff has been horrible. I mean, Detroit was one of my survivor entries. So I watched this game. He was awful. Like, just really, really, really bad. They lost Vita Vea in the middle of this game. My big loss was the Ravens, to be clear, and that was the most comedy of errors at the end of that game. If you watch what happened there between the penalties, the shaky PI call, and then the 19-yard punt was really something. Where were we? Laporta was ignored by Goff even when St. Brown was off the field when he dealt with that injury in the second half. I feel good about ranking Trey McBride ahead of him. I mean, things will get better for sure. Laporta, stick there. What if ARSB St. Brown is hurt? You know, I mean, he definitely, that could linger. That would help Laporta. But Goff has been bad. Jameson Williams broken out. We all expected touchdown regression from Laporta. You know, he's not the top pass catcher on his team, and now he's not the second top pass catcher. And this is the team that runs first that has Montgomery and Gibbs. So Laporta is going to go down as a disappointment compared to his ADP. But he can still obviously be a top three fantasy tight end nevertheless.
Yeah, I'm at some panic for all the reasons that you have there as well, where I definitely think he's going to go down as a disappointment for where he was picked, because he was picked so high, like a top 30 player off the board. But I think he can still end up having a decent season. You're right. He was ignored by Goff several times in that game. And just like Goff has been taking the shots when they're available. I wonder if that changes. I wonder if Ben Johnson gets back in his ear and says, hey, like, we need to take some of these, just gimme buttons. Just, we need to spam the easy stuff to Sam Laporta. I wonder if that changes. I think he's gotten a little bit too carried away with it. I like what I've seen out of James Williams, but I think he's gotten a little carried away with taking some of those shots because it's made the offense, you're right, it's made Goff a bad player through 2 weeks. He has not had a great start to the season. So I think we could see more of Laporta going forward.
Did you see what happened at the end of that game? They blew a field goal at the end of the first half. They let the 10-second runoff when unnecessary, Campbell. And then they were down, of course, down 4 points within field goal range to end the game.
Very
classic. That, they were calling run plays at the end of that final drive. Very weird. Without Vita Vea, they couldn't even run the ball. Their projected highest implied team point total this week was like 30 points. Mm. They dropped 16 points at home against a banged-up secondary, Tampa Bay. I mean, that was a really bad offensive performance. Goff is usually just so good at home. I mean, 44 touchdowns over his previous 17 games entering the year, and he's been flat out awful through 2 games this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, let's move on to the next one here. This one comes in from Craig something or another. Dalton Kincaid has got me freaked. I'm at total panic on Dalton Kincaid. I drafted Dalton Kincaid in one league and I'm ready to take the L on it. Not because I think he's not going to be a productive player. I think he'll have better days, whatever, the usage, the snaps, the routes, whatever. Some of that stuff has been there. But here are the two things that had to happen for Dalton Kincaid to go down as a success at his aggressive ADP. And as much as I did draft him in one league, but I talked about this stuff all off season, wrote about it in an article where I broke down the Bills pass catchers. Two things had to be true. One, he had to clearly be the top pass catcher on the Bills, which I was always skeptical about. I thought guys like Curtis Samuel, who has not played a lot yet coming off that toe injury, but I thought guys like Samuel, Shakir, who I love and who has looked really good through the first couple weeks, and like Coleman would eventually get in there. But like none of these guys has clearly taken over as the one, but they've all kind of nipped at each other's heels. And Kincaid is not separated from those guys. I don't know that he is going to ever separate from those guys. Good player, but like, is he so much more of a good player than any of those guys I just listed out? That's where I'm skeptical. And then the second thing that had to be true, Dalton, is that the Bills had to be the same old Bills that we knew, which is they're going to throw the ball over the yard, which they are clearly not. And I think they've been trying to tell us that they are clearly not going to be that team. So because those two things are not true, if I have Dalton Kincaid and I thought he was going to be like a top five tight end this season, I would be in total panic mode.
Yeah, Joe Brady made the Bills the most run-heavy team in the league after he took over play calling last year, and they've remained that way, and they're just going to spread targets around. Keon Coleman looked like the clear lead guy week one, and then it was nothing the second week. You like Shakir. Samuel will get healthier. Dawson Knox had these major splits with Kincaid on the field, both on the field last year. So this is going to be a run-heavy team that spreads it around. Ultimately, Kincaid can finish as a top 12 fantasy tight end, but you're total panic if you drafted him as a top 5-1.
Next one up here comes in from H-Town Hank. All the Rams, he's panicking about. Cluster injuries on the offensive side of the ball, looking to snowball. If the O-line doesn't hold up and Stafford gets hurt, it's over for all of them. As we are taping this, Sean McVay said that Cooper Kupp is expected to miss significant time, and he is a candidate to go on injured reserve. Dalton?
You had to ruin your DFS day, too, by having it in the first half in a game they were going to throw the ball a million times. 21 targets week one, Harmon. I had this guy to lead the league in receptions at like 45-1. Come on,
he still
dude.
Leads. He still is, leads the NFL in targets. Oh my! This is like all
now. It was his other ankle. So yeah. I mean, I get it. He's older, but I mean, come on. This is a high ankle sprain where he's rolled up on that could have happened to anyone. Nothing to do with age. His other ankle. Oh, so frustrating, dude. Man, this offense is totally toast now.
Yeah, this is it, folks. This is our first submission to the coping corner. I think, I mean, look, number one, Puka and Kupp are on IR. You're already coping if you drafted those dudes. Matthew Stafford is not going to be a startable fantasy quarterback. I don't want to be fielding a bunch of DeMarcus Robinson, Tyler Johnson questions anymore. And if you have Kyren Williams, you're just waiting to be screwed on this one. Yeah, he's had some moments so far, but I think he goes into all of them go into the coping corner. There's no like panic. Yes, the Rams are screwed, man. I mean, it's unfortunate. It sucks that just like 2 weeks into the season, the Rams season is over. But this is not the team that we thought we'd be getting in the LA Rams. And I did say it a lot in the preseason that like I was worried about this team. They were so fragile. I was definitely worried when a bunch of fantasy analysts last week came out and told everyone they were so stupid for fading Cooper Kupp this year because he's Cooper Kupp. He's so good. Yeah, he got injured last year. Well, he's injured again. This is what happens when dudes get older and they do start getting like one thing happens after another. I know you're going to tell me it's bad luck in that stuff, but I mean, this is what happens to older players, man. They start to pick up injuries and it becomes a problem.
Well, Pacheco, it's the same injury, type injury. I mean, what's his age? I mean, is that his age, his broken
foot?
Well,
you know what? You know what I will say to push back on you because you're talking about a running back there. Like, everybody gets all up and people flayed me for this on talking about it on Twitter because Jordan Rodriguez had the stat that when the Rams throw to Cooper Kupp more than 15 times, they're 1-6. And I pointed out like, yeah, it's not a good thing when one of your players has more targets than you score points. Like he had 21 targets to 20 points for the Rams in week one. My point in that is not like, I'm not stupid. And I thought all of you guys were not stupid too. I try to talk to my audience like they're not idiots. You know, and my point is not like, yeah, they're losing because they're throwing a Cooper Kupp. It's like, they're not a good team when they only have one guy. And by the way, it's not good when you're throwing the ball 21 times to an older player because you're submitting him to more punishment. Like a running back. We all say all running backs are injury risks because they take a lot of punishment. Kupp has taken more punishment at the wide receiver position because he blocks, because he gets involved in the run game than almost anyone else. So that's my only point in why it was still clearly a risk for him. I was excited after week one, but he's in the coping corner. They're all in the coping corner.
He wasn't efficient with those targets, and he probably would have pulled a hammy or something age-related in the next game, sure. But I'm just saying, I believe this one was fluky. Bad luck. He was in store for a freaking monster fantasy season without Nacua. But now, I kind of compared the Rams to the Dolphins entering the season, in which I'd love to pick them to make the playoffs, but they're just this fine-tuned sports car when it's tough to last the whole season by the end of the year and the injuries. I mean, last year they led the NFL by like a full yard per play when they were healthy together on the field, but now they're all down. And we haven't even gone over the injuries at offensive line. I mean, there's so many, too many to talk about. I am going to bring up DeMarcus Robinson later, much to your chagrin, sorry. But Kyren Williams... He was getting carries in this blowout in the fourth quarter. Like, what is McVay doing? I mean, I don't know. He seems obviously a worse situation, but another injury risk. And at least Blake Corum overtook Ronnie Rivers in the depth chart for those holding on to Corum. But yes, the upside there is obviously dwindled now with all the stars hurt in LA.
So a reminder for new listeners and viewers this year, this is what the coping corner entails. Because the Rams are in the coping corner, they can no longer be submitted or discussed on the people's panic meter. If they have a turnaround performance, we can consider taking them out of the coping corner. But generally, like Tony Pollard last year, like the Jaguars passing game last year, once you go into the coping corner, you do not leave. Last year, the coping corner became Pollard's playground. We'll have to workshop that Cups conundrum, or I don't know. We'll work on some kind of Rams related pun for the coping corner. But for now, yeah, we're 2 weeks into the season. We've just put an entire offense into the coping corner, and I don't think we're going to have to take them out at any point. All right. Speaking of entire offense, Coatsy71 is panicking about all of the Bears. Shane Waldron is doing his best Cliff Kingsbury, but just the worst parts. I think Shane Waldron is doing his best Shane Waldron. This looks like the bad Seahawks offense from last year, Dalton Del Don. I know you were optimistic about the Bears. I was optimistic about the Bears. I'm out. I'm not starting any Bears player unless I have to. And the only guy you should probably have to is DJ Moore. I'm not trying to start any of these players in fantasy going forward.
Yeah, it's a total panic for me. Caleb Williams has 14.6 fantasy points through two games. Bryce Young had 21 through two games his rookie year. Caleb has gotten a lowly 4.0 yards per attempt, still searching for his first NFL touchdown. He's lucky a third interception was negated by a penalty Sunday night. In fairness to the rookie, he was missing Keenan Allen, has shaky coaching, continues to get zero help from the running game. He took multiple late shots in which no flags were thrown. Man, he was taking a beating back there. Ryan's blitzed the most he ever has in an NFL game as coach. Caleb's a major work in progress. I overranked him in fantasy. I thought he was going to run and have all these weapons. Adunze obviously isn't 100%. Downgrade DJ Moore. This is an awesome Chicago Bears defense, but an offense that's, It's a disappointment. I was worried about the coaching, but I thought Caleb and the skill players could overcome it. But now we're in a situation with shaky coaching and a quarterback who looks every bit the rookie, who's a major work in progress.
Yeah, you said a lot of what I said on the on my solo recap on the pod last night. And like, I went back and charted Rome Odunze, especially from week one. I thought it looked really good, but it just doesn't matter. Like, nobody can get the ball downfield because their plan against protection is so, so bad. And now he's banged up. Keenan Allen's not playing. Like, this team gave real legitimate money to DeAndre Swift and Gerald Everett, guys that have just been cast-offs for two, like, multiple other NFL teams. And they're getting, like, legit playing time along with DeAndre Carter. I mean, this is a mess in Chicago.
Harmon, I was going to do this off-air, but I'll just do it now. Why not? So, do you remember the first time I've asked someone else's advice on a trade in years, but I came to you this offseason, and in a Dynasty League, I told you I was offered Rashee Rice and Jameson Williams for Rome Odunze. You told me to reject it. In fairness to
It'll
you,
well.
I was leaning that way anyway, in fairness to you. But boy, that does not look super great two weeks into this year with Jameson Williams doing his thing, Rice not getting suspended doing his. This isn't great. I have a pretty good team. I feel like I'd probably be the favorite had I just accepted that trade. Odunze better have a bright future, fella. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Oh, my God. I'm sure it was in the middle of.
Are you big buddies with Derek Brown? I know you've had him on this podcast before, but I believe it's him that made this offer. So maybe you just knew you wanted him to not get.
If you think for a second I would help Derek Brown over you, how dare you? I would help you 100. I would sink Derek Brown's fantasy team for you any day of the week, pal. You can impugn my dynasty trading advice. Do not impugn my friendship and my honor, Dalton Del Don. It does not look great right now. I'm sure Rashee Rice will get suspended and it'll all look fine. All right, let's move on quickly.
That's just a funny one to have to bring. Sorry, that's
no,
just too
yeah,
funny.
That looks hilarious.
And
hey,
Odunze tears his knee. I mean, it's just hilarious.
I always say on the show my worst thing as a fantasy analyst is trades. So that looks pretty rough at this point.
I came to you, my wide receiver specialist.
What
you know,
an I'm idiot.
Like, no, dude, no, Odunze. Odunze could be a star, man.
Yeah.
It's just funny looking at it now.
Yeah, I knew where you're going with that, and I immediately was like, oh no. All right, let's talk through Arrowhead Adam sends in Tank Dell. It was easy to explain one off night with missed deep connections, but now that's the story 2 weeks in a row. He seems like a boom-bust wide receiver theory who has been deprioritized with Diggs and Mixon around. I'm at some panic with Tank Dell, Dalton, only because if you thought he was going to be more than a boom-bust wide receiver three, which is where I ranked him, I think you were a little over your skis. Nico's just so clearly the alpha here, and like everybody else, Diggs and Mixon included, will be supporting actors.
I want to be clear. I was leaning no on that deal too, Harmon. Truthfully, I probably would have said no regardless of you. So, but it's funnier to blame it on you.
That's fine.
Okay, yeah. Some panic on Dell here because I ranked him a little bit higher than most. He dropped 73-yard touchdown in the third quarter Sunday night. Things would have looked a lot better if he just held on to that. Tough matchup against the Bears secondary. Mm-hmm. But yes, Dell is going to be a boom-bust type player more than most receivers. Nico Collins has emerged. When they played when they're on the field together and Dell saw more than like 50% of the snaps last year, Dell had more fantasy production than Nico. Clearly, that's not going to be the case this year. Collins is the alpha. But what if Joe Mixon misses significant time here and Akers and Damian Pierce, they can't run the ball. They're going to be passing more in better matchups. Diggs and PPR, I get it, but I still think Dell in like a half PPR is going to put up some points comparable to Diggs, but maybe that ages poorly because it's been a rough first two games for sure.
I think the passing offense hasn't fully clicked yet either. So there's definitely more. I'm saying some panic here for Tank Dell, but he's a guy that if people are freaking out because, the negative yardage last night, I would definitely trade for him. I still think he's a decent trade target.
And the thing is, he doesn't start and all that, but I feel like they'll run enough three wide out sets and he'll get the ball when he's on the field enough. So I think he's a buy low personally. I mean, but again, it's all about expectations. But so he almost had a 73-yard touchdown. He was wide open. He caught the ball. He would have walked in the end zone.
Next one up here comes in from Fantas Chief. There's no league where you can bench Tyreek Hill, but does Jalen Waddle remain locked into lineups with Skylar Thompson thrown in the rock? We haven't had a chance to talk about this situation with Tua, which obviously horrible what happened on Thursday night with him. Who knows when he'll be back? It's really not worth speculating or like opining on this whole thing. So just from a brass tacks perspective here, Dalton, I'm at total panic for these Dolphins receivers with Tua not in the lineup.
I put total panic as well in three starts in 2022. Skylar Thompson, Tyreek Hill was targeted on 30% of his routes. That's good. But he gained just 139 yards on those 27 targets, averaged 11.2 PPR points. Waddle was targeted on just 14% of his targets per route run. That's ranked 96th. And he only averaged 7.9 PPR points. We all hope the best for Tua, but it sounds like he might go on the IR. There's talk of it. I don't know whatever the Tua situation. We just all hope the best for his health. Armstead, their left tackle's also injured. Skylar Thompson, as quarterback, is not what Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Achan fantasy managers were hoping for here. They are all significantly downgraded.
All right, let's go to our final social submission before we hit the waiver wire. This one comes in from Drewmet_FF. I'm worried that Jaden Daniels has a personal vendetta against Terry McLaurin. It's not Jaden Daniels' fault. I keep telling people it's the structure of the offense and where Terry lines up and what Cliff Kingsbury asks of his offense. This is from Rich Rebar, this stat, Lord Reeves on Twitter. 37.9% of Washington's wide receiver targets have come behind the line of scrimmage, the highest rate in the league. The league average is 11.3. Not just targets, 37.9% wide receiver targets behind the line of scrimmage. That's pathetic. And that's the offense that Terry McLaurin plays in. And I keep saying this, I do think we need to recalibrate where Terry McLaurin is as a player. Like, I think he has taken a couple of steps back as a number one receiver. So just with all that said, I'm at total panic with Terry McLaurin. I'm about this close to coping corner with Terry McLaurin, which I hate to do because he's one of my favorite players in the league.
Yeah, I put him at coping corner, but I won't fight you over it. But he did see his target share rise from 16% to 27% in week two.
Yeah, see, that's what resulted in
nothing. Yeah. Lined up on the same side of the field, so frustrating. His average depth of target has dropped three straight seasons, really cratering at 9.5 yards. This year it was 12.4. Last year, you stole that stat from me about the target behind the line of scrimmage. Jaden Daniels is averaging just 3.3 yards per attempt to Scary Terry, 9.0 yards per attempt to everyone else. I don't know what to make of that. But Daniels, is this going to be, run first quarterback, looking to scramble at the first sign of any pressure? So I was leaning toward coping corner, but at minimum, total panic here with Scary Terry, who belongs on all fantasy benches for the time being.
Yeah, among wide receivers and tight ends, the player with the third most routes, really actually this guy with the third most routes on the team is Luke McCaffrey, the rookie receiver. He has -1 air yards on the season. That's the third receiver. The third pass catcher in this offense is the rookie receiver, Luke McCaffrey, with -1 air yards. Pretty great stuff here in Washington. All right, let's definitely need to palate cleanse after that. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to run through our waiver wire segment right after this. All right, we're back. Let's take a look at this week's waiver wire connections presented by Spectrum. So, Dalton, every week we come out here with our large, medium, small priority players on the waiver wire this week. I want to flesh out what this means a little bit before we jump in here, just getting some feedback from users and listeners and stuff like that. For me, when I say like a large priority player, I don't mean, you know, you need to be dropping 50% of your budget on this player every single week, because guess what? There's not that player on the, you know, waiver wire every single week. If the player is that, we will definitely tell you. If there's a, you know, Puka or Kyren Williams 2023 on the waiver wire, we'll make that clear. Like, that's what this guy is from a free agent budget perspective. But I just, when I see a large priority player, Dalton, I'm saying like this guy, if he's available in your league, should be on rosters. Maybe he's not a league winner or anything like that, but he just should be on rosters. Small priority players are more like, yeah, we can get this guy and like he like just kind of stick him on the end of your bench and see what happens, if that makes sense.
Yeah, makes total sense, because every league is just so different. I hate answering questions. How much of my budget should I spend? You should got to know your league, and bench spots are so different too, roster depth. So one size does not fit all with these fantasy leagues. So well said, Harmon.
All right. So with that, let's talk through our large priority players. You have a Chiefs running back here, because Isaiah Pacheco has landed on IR. He's going to miss, obviously, up to 4 weeks. So, Dalton, for the large priority player, who should the people be targeting on the waiver wire this week?
Carson Steele is my guy. Pacheco, last I saw, I think he might miss 6 to 8 weeks. Steele was highly productive in college. I get it. He looks like a fullback, and maybe this will be a total split backfield. But he's the favorite for carries in Kansas City right now, including goal line work. Samaje Perine saw one touch compared to Steele's 7 in week 2. Steele fumbled as well, and he continued to see work. Even that short pass to the lineman for the touchdown, that came off a play action to Steele. Clyde Edwards-Helaire could eventually return, and the Chiefs have brought in Kareem Hunt for a workout. But I think there's enough potential upside here just to see what happens with Steele. He's available in 95% of Yahoo leagues. Andy Reid reportedly said Steele is going to have to step into that role of featured back. Let's see what happens, man. I mean, he's getting goal line carries for the Chiefs, man. Give me Carson Steele. Nate Tice says that's no fullback. So who am I to argue against Tice?
Yeah, I like it. I think he's definitely a guy that he would probably be my first choice of these Chiefs backs. I'm not sure that how this is going to go. You know, I don't have like a strong lean one way or another. Like if we knew for sure one of these guys was the RB2, they would be like a 50%er on the waiver wire. They'd be like a let's empty the budget to get whoever is going to replace. Let's get whoever is going to replace Isaiah Pacheco as the Chiefs RB1, but we don't have that level of conviction. So honestly, like if you want to pass, if you want to pass on this Chiefs running back situation, I think that's totally okay. But yeah, I'm with you that if you're prioritizing one, Carson Steele is the guy to do it with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think he's worth grabbing in all leagues and to see what happens. Maybe it's a long shot, but I think given it's the Chiefs and this guy's profile, I think he should be added in all leagues. 95%. Maybe I'm crazy and it'll look bad and he'll just be like a fullback type. But I think that there is a range of outcomes that he should be added in all leagues.
Yeah, I'll just skip to it right now. I'll go back to my large player in a second. But for my medium priority player, I did put Samaje Perine here. Again, another player that I think should probably be go ahead and add him in all leagues. I'm putting him as the medium priority player because I think Steele should take the first priority. And in addition to that, is Samaje Perine going to be any more than just a passing down specialist? You know, that's who he's mostly been in his last two stops, especially in Cincinnati, but he's a guy who can't, he's a bigger back who can carry a workload, at least back in college he could. So very late addition to the team. Really have no idea what to make of that, but he's another guy that I think should be rostered in all leagues. I wouldn't, again, from a free agent budget perspective, I would not go crazy adding Perine. If someone else, you know, blows their wallet to do it, I would be fine missing out on it, but he's definitely someone that should be added in all leagues.
Agreed, and it could be the case of him getting less work because he's still learning the system, yeah. And there's more PPR upside with him for sure as a passing down back, and it'll probably be a combination. He'll take passing down work, and and steal the short yardage work. But who gets the touches in between the 20s there? If it is the same person that gets the red zone work, I still think Steele could be valuable even without the receptions.
So I'll go back to my large priority player here, and that's Minnesota Vikings running back Ty Chandler, who I think is a little bit of a flex with benefits, or should I say, he's got some standalone value, but also is a great insurance back, right? Like Aaron Jones, Nate Tyson and I broke it down in the fantasy film room. We're very excited about where this Vikings running game is right now. And a big part of that is because Aaron Jones is so good. But I think Ty Chandler's got a little pop. And, you know, when Jones had to miss some time in week two, Ty Chandler had a couple of good showings. He is definitely the second running back here. If something happens to Aaron Jones, he would definitely be a fantasy starter because his offensive ecosystem looks good. And especially the interior of the offensive line, I think, has outplayed expectations so far this year. So for Ty Chandler, I think he's someone that if you're desperate, you know, especially when it gets to bye weeks and if he has a role, maybe he could be like a deep, deep flex option. But obviously the biggest thing is that he should not be on any waiver wires, because the second something happens to Aaron Jones, and something has already happened to Aaron Jones, it's not serious, but something has happened to him already, he would definitely be a 50% or, you know, you're like opening the whole wallet for this guy. So why not try to get him on your bench now?
Oh, yeah, totally with you here. Even if Chandler's not a special player, he might not be a good player, but he would probably get 20 touches if Aaron Jones were to go down. And Jones is 29 years old. This might be a terrific situation to be in, especially if we can get Jefferson healthy. Darnold looks good. They're top five in pass rate over expectation like they were last year. O'Connell knows what he's doing. Their defense might be elite. This team is better than I expected. And Chandler, if he becomes a feature back, he would be worth 100% of your budget to go get.
All right, so I talked about my medium priority player with Samaje Perine. Dalton, who is your medium priority player?
Sadly, it's Braylon Allen is someone who has a lot of Breece Hall. I do have him a lot as insurance still. But, man, the youngest player to score a touchdown in the modern era Sunday, he could have had three, Harmon. He scored two. And the play in which Breece Hall caught that sick touchdown, you know, he was out. Mm-hmm. Hall was on the sideline and Rodgers had to call a timeout like to prevent a delay game. Then they brought Hall back in. But that would have been Allen running that route. He's running routes out there. So he would have had all three of the touchdowns and I would have been crying even further. But Allen provides a big back change of pace. This team wants to run and play D. Allen played 20 snaps against the Titans and ran just 9 fewer routes than Hall. As I said before, no team has a higher running back target share than the Jets, 33%. Huge contingency upside should Hall go down. He's a possible flex play in the right matchup if he continues to get work like that. It's possible they kind of backed off Hall a bit in a short week traveling, but Allen looks awesome. He looked great in the preseason, and he's available in 90% of Yahoo leagues. Great college resume.
Great college resume, and I think a player that they need on the offense right now, honestly. Like, they need a second pitch to Breece Hall. I know you're tilted about the two touchdowns, but getting some grinder carries away from Hall is probably good to keep him fresh in the long term. And they also need weapons, and Braylon Allen is definitely a weapon on the ground.
Yeah, and Hall still got fine usage. Yeah. He actually, his route percentage was still like top four too, because their running backs are just out there getting a lot of targets from Rodgers. That's their offense, it looks like. So yeah, Allen is definitely someone who should be rostered in all fantasy leagues.
I'm implying that you're crying too much about this Breece Hall thing.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I know. He's fine.
You were doom scrolling at the beginning where you said all these bad things that have happened to you. And you're like, and Breece Hall, you know, Braylon. And I was like, yeah, you had a fine. Let's stick with the things that are actually bad in your life, Dalton.
Yeah,
not go down this Breece Hall misery hole. I'll go down a producer Colin love hole here with my small priority player here. One of his offseason crushes was obviously Jalen Tolbert, baby. That's my small priority player here. So producer Colin, you are welcome for this one. Jalen Tolbert, pretty awesome on Sunday in a losing effort against the maybe I'm being a little generous to say it was awesome against the Saints, but he had a couple of moments. He did have a lot of targets. So far, he's run a route on 72.8% of the dropbacks for Dallas. Tolbert is a guy that got some pop in the offseason. I think that Tolbert was an interesting prospect. And like long term, I do think we just haven't seen the best of this Cowboys offense. And he's a small priority player to me, not because I think you're about to start Jalen Tolbert. I think obviously if you just start Jalen Tolbert, your fantasy team is not good. But I do think that he's somebody that you should just, again, this is what the small priority is for. Stick him on the end of your bench if you have a deep spot and just kind of see what happens.
Jalen Tolbert had a better day than Jalen Brooks. I'll tell you that much. Brooks fell down and cost Dak an interception there. This offense, you know, the Cowboys put up a lot of points in Cleveland, but their yards per play was not great. I know a tough matchup, and maybe I clearly underrated the Saints' defense. They're a strong unit. But man, this Dallas offense definitely misses a second option there, and hopefully Tolbert emerges. Ferguson obviously missed last week, but the running game, you know, not great. What's going on in Dallas? That was wild. How much they were blown out by the Saints. I mean, that was just a boat race from the get go.
Saints are the offense of the year, baby. Pre-snap motion, Clint Kubiak. Everything is looking great in New Orleans. We mentioned DeMarcus Robinson earlier in the show, Dalton. He is your small priority player to round this thing up.
Yeah, I see your Jalen Tolbert and raise you D-Rob here. He led all the Rams in routes run. Cooper Kupp, you know, Puka's down. I know you put the whole offense in the coping corner, and that's fair. I think the team's not going to be able to run the ball without offensive line problems, playing from behind. The Rams are the best team for fantasy wide receiver production the last few years. DeMarcus Robinson was productive down the stretch last year, available in 60% of Yahoo leagues. I understand he's not just going to be like the alpha in the Rams offense, but he's definitely the favorite to lead the team in targets now.
Yes, that is depressing. He is the favorite to lead the team in targets. And Matthew Stafford obviously can make it happen with just about anybody, so... Yeah, I mean, I would not love, like, okay, I got to start DeMarcus Robinson. Maybe I end up being wrong and he looks great. I think he's a solid player. I think he's a good role player for the Rams, but just it's tough. But I totally agree. He should, at this point, he should not be on waiver wires. He's actually a guy that's probably going to be in that, I don't know, weekly wide receiver 40-ish range when we're doing rankings, right?
Yep, that sounds fair to me. Jordan Whittington hasn't stepped up. Tutu Atwell at his moments, but I think Robinson actually is targeted in the red zone even when the Rams were healthy last year. So yeah, the offense isn't going to be nearly as efficient, but I just think the setup is there to him to see a lot of volume.
All right, this has been the Waiver Wire Connections on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, presented by Spectrum, and that is going to do it for today's episode. Dalton, hell of a show. Glad you cried some tears, some real tears over a few things, some crocodile tears over your Breece Hall stuff, and you slammed me for one of the worst dynasty trades of the offseason. So hell of a show by you, buddy. We had some great emails from the people, so everybody had a great day except me.
I appreciate you, Harmon, and get well soon, Chloe, man. That knee needs to heal. I appreciate you putting up with my, my silliness, as always, Harmon. Good stuff.
Happy to do it, brother. I appreciate you. And yes, Chloe, get well soon. These NFL players are getting injured. Let's leave the injuries to them. Let's get Chloe healthy so she can be the dominant racer that we know she is. Like I said, that is going to do it for us on today's show. On Wednesday, Sal Vetri will be back. He will join me for the post week 2 data dump. We're going to tell you the stats you need to know heading into week number 3. And you cannot miss this. You literally cannot miss it. And talk about a guy who actually is good at trades. Sal will be on the show, and you'll hear less of me talking about trades. I'm never talking about trades again after this Dalton Del Don flamethrower this episode. Until then, we're out.